your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
It's easy to think short term. After all, the unemployment rate is the lowest in 50 years, but most of us in the heart of hearts know that that's probably transient. And we don't make career choices based on what's going to happen the next year, but on the arc of our work span, which could be, depending upon your age, if you're a young person, you're 20, it could be a 60-year work span. If you're 50 years old, it could be 20 or 30 years. How can you future-proof your career? Of course, they say he who lives by the crystal ball eats broken glass, so I am saying this with a measure of humility, but I want to share with you my best thoughts on what are the best ways to future-proof your career. First, in terms of mindset, that's not something you would normally think about, but what's critical, as I think is as a prerequisite, as foundational, is to have a mindset that's going to prepare you for future success. Two, what are some future-friendly careers? Three, what is the next generation of training going to look like? And some tips about how to succeed on the job, which can be fairly, I would say those are fairly timeless, but it would be incomplete if I didn't include that. Start with mindset. There are many people who have a strong bias, either toward the private sector or toward the government sector, toward the nonprofit sector. No one's got a crystal ball, but from where I sit, at least, demographics and society's mind molders, that is, the major ones are the colleges and the media, their messages, their perspective tends to be unilateral. And that is that the U.S. will, over your work span, move leftward. And that means that a growing proportion of the GDP, the gross domestic product, is going to be in the nonprofit and government sectors. So while the private sector, especially like category-killing corporations like Google or Amazon or Home Depot, for example, will thrive, the future-proofed person is going to be open to opportunities within all three sectors. So valuing work in all three sectors is one component of a future-oriented mindset. Next, decide that you're going to become an expert at something. I mean, if you had a serious disease, wouldn't you go to a specialist rather than a general practitioner? Also, that's, you know, most employers also usually want to hire specialists. Sure, there may be some generalist jobs, but they tend to be dead end at the bottom, or when you really rise to the top, if you're the CEO of a nonprofit or a company, you need to be a generalist. But for the vast majority of jobs, being a specialist is going to be increasingly key to being well employed. Of course, look, I understand that you and I might find dabbling fun, but it does likely reduce your employability. So decide to become an expert at something that at least some employers or some customers would value, and stay with that until you're pretty darn good at it. And the side benefit of that, it's going to avoid the imposter syndrome, which, you know, so many people have degrees, including even a PhD, and yet they feel they're very far from expert. So think about deciding to become expert at something that it strikes the balance between marketability and nonetheless something that you intrinsically value and find interesting. And the third part of the mindset that I want to share with you today is to try to resist the temptation to forego networking. Even if you're an already well-employed, even top-performing introvert in a high-demand field, it's usually wise for networking to be part of your life. Why? It can yield fresh knowledge that would improve your performance further in a very practical sense. It could get you leads on an even better job or self-employment. It could allow you to teach others, which benefits you. People love to teach stuff, what they know, and it helps solidify your expertise. I want to stress, though, that networking comes in many forms. For example, an introvert doesn't need to be a schmoozer. An introvert could share their expertise in an article or a presentation at a conference or in a YouTube video, which, as you're going to see in my various messages to you today, we are moving into an ever more video-centric rather than text-centric world. So making short YouTube videos about your expertise may well be an interesting way to network, ever more valuable moving forward. And, of course, participating in online forums, you know, whether it be through your professional association or LinkedIn or Yahoo groups. That's a kind of networking that will increasingly, as we get ever oh, it's harder and harder to get together in person because the commute times, travel times are just wild. So, okay, so that was a couple of mindset things. Now let's talk about when we normally think about future-proofing a career, we normally think about what careers are going to be future. Nothing's future-proof, but say future-friendly. I've picked these as relating, as reflecting what I call major societal vectors, the major forces affecting society. And one is, for example, biotech and genomics and its associated personalized medicine. This business of treating cancer by poisoning it with radiation or just poisons is going to give way to very personalized approaches. Big data. It's a commonly used term, but all these massive data sets that Google and Facebook and all the rest of them are gathering on us, whether it be for a for-profit that's trying to sell more product or a non-profit that's trying to extract more money from potential donors, these big data and the ability to make sense out of that big data will be clearly an important vector. Deep learning is another fancy term for an advanced form of artificial intelligence. The aging population is another vector. Of course, environmentalism. And, as I implied earlier, redistribution of GDP to the nonprofit and government sectors. And these careers that I picked also are they tend to be offshore resistant, automation resistant, not just over the next year or two, but I'm trying to picture 20, 30 years down the line, what is likely to be automation resistant. And they're mainly things where you have to either be hands-on or there's so much interpersonal nuance or cognitive nuance that it's unlikely that even in 20, 30 years, no matter how much machine learning and artificial intelligence there is, that there's going to be that high a level of nuance of thinking possible and language and speech and writing possible with the computer. And I also have picked out those that I think are clearly contributory to society. No tobacco companies listed on these, working for a tobacco company, and which don't have, even a little more stringent than that, don't have any major ethical liabilities. And I picked them from the 340 careers that are in my new book, Careers for Dummies. Okay, first of all, most of the later ones, I've got other lists, but the list I created, I deliberately didn't want to be so tech-heavy. You're going to see the other lists I'm going to be citing are very tech-heavy, but so many people just, you know, even if it's not fast-growing, they're not going to be a data scientist. So I've tried to focus on the less tech-centric jobs, generally, although I can't ignore data scientists because it's going to be so core. But I want to start by talking about these that I've come up with from my book that are not so tech-centric. And the first is grant writer. The government, foundations, other large nonprofits distribute billions of dollars based on grant proposals. And the grant writer, usually working for a government agency or a nonprofit, reviews databases of what are called requests for proposals. This is a large list of who wants to give away money. And you look through that database to find a request for proposal that your organization might win. Then you, as the grant writer, review the relevant literature on the subject. You talk with your own organization's employees and with the grant maker, that's who's giving away the money, to craft a proposal. Grant writer, great career, very rewarding, a little under the radar. The flip side of that is a job called program evaluator. After an organization gives you the money, or gives it, not you personally, but the organization wants to know how well it was spent. And that's where the program evaluator comes in. And it's a rewarding career because you're always seeing some innovative programs. You might be working one for 2 or 3 months and then go on the next one, and you're helping to decide which ones should be continued, which should be expanded, which should be enhanced, improved, or cut. And that makes you very important and very interesting and very interesting job. Next, I've got to mention, as I said, data scientist. This is and likely will stay among the most in-demand careers, especially if you specialize in the aforementioned deep learning. This is the fancy words, but I don't know how else better to say it. I'll say it the fancy words and I'll try to simplify it. What deep learning is multivariate, recursively self-teaching software. That means taking into account many, many factors in different layers, one set at a time, and then the computer almost teaching itself what was wrong? What wrong guesses did they make? The most easy example is pictures. If we want to teach a computer to read what is a dog versus what is not a dog, well, every time that first set of layers guesses right and wrong, it gets feedback. That was correct. Good. That was wrong. We lower the value, the power of some other factor to determine dogness. It's clearly a very, very powerful career in everything from security, you know, like bioterrorism, to education, to automated voice recognition when you're calling, getting a quicker, better answer to your customer service problem. Let me see what else I want to say about this. I guess I want to say a little more about data scientists because it's so important. I'll say it in another way. Your job is to create a paradigm for making scientific decisions, business decisions, government decisions, nonprofit decisions, and then the mathematical and statistical models, you're creating those, using those, to derive practical implications from those massive databases. The most in-demand data scientists, they're going to, in addition to being having great statistical and mathematical chops, they're going to have content expertise, especially in consumer behavior and in nonprofit donor behavior. It's a very difficult career, but it is probably the one that I would bet the most money will be enduring. And we, right now, I'm well aware that there are many data scientists making $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, even $1 million a year. Away from the technology now, genetic counselor. Scientists are learning that ever more who we are is genetically mediated, not genetically caused, but is at least predisposed. You're predisposed based on your genetics. And in the era of 23andMe, that company, for just $199, an individual can decode their genome to assess their predisposition to disease in themselves or their progeny. And that is going to lead to thorny decision-making around whether to get pregnant, for example. And genetic counselors are the people who, with a blend of knowledge of the science and of the human interaction and good listening skills and questioning skills, etc., help people make those decisions. Genetic counselor. Next, of course, is genetic researcher. It's a safe bet. There's going to be an ongoing need for PhD-level scientists to explore the genetic basis of major physical illness and mental illness, and maybe even, if society deems it ethical, the augmentation of normal cognitive functioning, and maybe even altruism. I mean, every parent would like a bright child who's altruistic. Now, of course, some of that is environment, without any question. Nobody would argue that it's not. But there are predispositions that come somewhat from genes. For example, you know, people with violence or violent have poor impulse control. And that in part may come from example because they secrete so much adrenaline in response to a stress, they can't resist punching somebody out. So genetic research is no question. And also, of course, as I said earlier, for personalized medicine. Optometrist. Aging boomers are going to need optometrists to deal with declining vision. Now, there are these ophthalmologists, those are MDs, and that requires a decade of post-bachelor's education to get a license. But ODs, that is doctors of optometry, are licensed in just 4 years after the bachelor's, and you make a solid income. They can diagnose and treat many eye conditions, and they have regular work hours. There aren't going to be a lot of people calling in the middle of the night with a contact lens problem. Another kind of parallel of those healthcare careers, certainly not offshoreable, orthodontist. It's not, also not going to be automatable. Many orthodontists like this profession because they get to see and know patients over months after month, after which patients' appearance is much improved, and that's something that many people care deeply about. Physical therapist. This is another career that's going to increase in demand as the boomers age. This job is more interesting than it used to be because now it primarily involves liaising with other medical practitioners to develop the treatment plan and then educate the patient and train the physical therapy assistants and physical therapy aides on how to implement the exercises that are required. And licensure requires a doctorate, but it's only a 3-year doctorate post-bachelor's. A related career is occupational therapist, requiring only a master's. That's it typically involves helping an accident patient or a stroke patient to reacquire basic life skills from buttoning a shirt to driving a car. Online education development. Still pretty darn crude. The U.S. is, many people are surprised to hear this, but the U.S. spends near the top, numbered one, two, or three, depending on which study you believe, in per capita education spending, but its achievement is near bottom. So if we're really being honest, it's pretty much back to the drawing board. Mere tweaks in the education system is not going to be enough, especially as good jobs are going to be becoming ever more cognitively demanding. And substantive improvement in education probably is going to lie in these very highly motivating, individualized, immersive lessons. And that's tough for even a top teacher to provide, let alone the whole nation of teachers. So ever more instruction is likely going to be provided by next generation online learning that are rich in simulations and individualized and often gamified. So learning how to be a next generation online education developer, in my judgment, is going to be very robust, because especially as we see so many people who have spent all the money and time on a 4 or 5 or 6 year or 7 year bachelor's degree and are ending up working as a barista, as per an Atlantic article recently, roughly half of college graduates now are working at jobs that don't require a college degree. There's going to be ever more people saying, you know what, let me do some just-in-time ongoing practical learning through these really potent, more effective online courses. Another career that I'm betting on for the future, in terms of a future-proof or at least future-resistant career, is energy engineer. Most people believe that climate change is affected by humans and is, it's a net negative. And energy engineers are key to addressing this. They could be, for example, squeezing more energy from fossil fuels. They could be, the first thing we think about, of course, is solar energy, wind energy. But it's also, and it's less popular, especially here in the Bay Area, and we think Chernobyl, so no nuclear, but the development of safe enough and compact enough nuclear power, which is an unlimited source of pollution-free energy, so energy engineer broadly defined, is a pretty much safe bet that it will be future-proof. Heavy equipment technician. Let's say you're not, you know, somebody who's going to get advanced degrees and you're maybe not the sharpest tool in the shed. You can't offshore maintenance and repair of robots. You can't offshore maintenance of MRI machines or like industrial printers. 3D printing is becoming really serious players in the manufacturing realm for businesses, creating parts, maybe even creating, not maybe, they've created even whole homes. So for a hands-on kind of person, that career of heavy equipment technician, which of course can't be offshored, should remain in demand. Graphic designer or artist with business expertise. Society, as I've said earlier, is moving from being tech-centric to loving the visual. So the graphic designer, the graphic artist who's got expertise in what is driving consumer behavior, not just makes pretty pictures, or who has a good sense of expertise or a sense of what will drive nonprofit donations, should have a good shot of being one of those artists who actually makes a living from their creations. And I keep talking about video, being a producer of short videos. We are in a world of short, 1 minute videos, 2 minute videos. That's what we're talking about. The job market should be reasonable for people who are script writers, producers, directors of short videos that induce behavior change. That is, buy this, donate to that, stop using drugs, whatever. All right. I want to give out the phone number. I've got much more to share with you about future-proofing your career, but these are pieces of general advice. One of the core missions of this show is to help you individually with your situation, which very often has implications for the other listeners. So if you've got a work-related problem, for example, you're worrying about future-proofing your career or that of someone you love, your child or even grandchild or whatever, or you've simply got a here-and-now work-related problem, you're just frustrated at work for one reason. You're angry, you're sad. It's usually got to be a negative emotion, or you're not motivated enough to try to get help. So if you're feeling something negative about your work life or lack thereof, I invite you to call in now. The show is Work with Marty Nemko, and the price is right, zero. So any kind of work problem, the phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I had mentioned at the top of the show that I wanted to focus primarily in the beginning focusing not on the pure tech careers, because there's so many people who just don't really want to be one of these, you know, good tech guys. But I would be remiss if I didn't share with you the reality that there are that so many of the hot jobs, both looking retrospectively in 2018 and projected for 2019, are very computer centric. And whether or not you're interested in them, you might find, you know, in pursuing them yourself, you might find it interesting to hear. This payscale.com is a website that does crowdsourcing of salary data and job attainment data. So they have a really huge database of who's hiring, how it's getting paid well, etc. So first, retrospectively, so there's no prediction involved. But in 2018, which certainly has a lot of implications for what's going to be in 2019 and beyond, each of the following careers had more than a 100% increase in growth from 2017. Number one, having increased 600%, full-stack software developer. And I will cop to the fact that I don't know in great detail what each of these are, but a full-stack software developer is somebody who's got a wide range of skills, I believe. Director of community engagement. That's not so technical, but it's very often there is such a belief in the word community. You hear it on KELW 10 million times, the word community. It's also heard in companies. It's realized that the public is ever more activist, and they can stop a company. They can, and a nonprofit, from a purely benevolent point of view, they want to help the local community. They use somebody called the director of community engagement. That person could be holding community meetings as preliminary to, for example, a real estate developer wants to build a project. They've got a director of community development to make sure that that the community is at least reasonably informed as to what's going on. The third one, and these are all over 100% growth per year, from 2017-2018, lead graphic designer, for the reason I talked about earlier, being a manager of a customer success team. Customer success is very often a fancy word for account manager. It's in charge of, after the sale, making sure the customer is happy and then upselling. Manager of customer success team. Senior mobile developer. I wouldn't have predicted this. I was dead wrong 5 years ago. But boy, we do an incredible amount of our computing on our phones now. And being a head of mobile development, usually porting over some big program so it will work on your Android or your iPhone. Employee engagement manager. That's a fancy word for a former HR person who's trying to make sure that employees are motivated, problems are resolved, whether they be about a lousy boss, racial or gender concerns, feeling that the mission in the company is not ethical, working to try to keep employees engaged while remaining ethical. Next is computer vision engineer. As I said, so much is we're moving from text to visual. There's going to be, whether it be for purposes of identifying terrorists or identifying, looking for yourself. You know, right now, if you're looking for pictures of yourself that aren't necessarily captioned, you can't find it with current technology. But computer vision will enable that to happen. And of course, computer vision is core to automated vehicles, because there are thousands of ways that an automated vehicle can crash into something, and the computer has to be able to see all these anomalies and correctly see the anomaly that it's a falling branch, not a falling leaf. A leaf shouldn't make the car stop. A branch probably should, and certainly a child. but seeing variations on it. I mean, a child bending over is going to look different to a computer than a child standing up. So computer vision engineer, clearly a critical and growing career. Business intelligence engineer. There is so much knowledge that is coming out of both the competitors, from the database, the data that gets collected by Google and Facebook, et cetera, and Amazon, and by their own customers. And being in charge of making sense of that from an engineering software standpoint is critical. And the next one is very overlapping. Machine learning. It's the same kind of thing. I'm not going to go into that. Machine learning is a version of what's called artificial intelligence and deep learning. It's not worth going into that, being that granular. Population health manager. Whether it be within a company or in a jurisdiction, a city, a county, a state, federally, trying to do various things to ensure the health of the population, whether it be public service announcements, or it be an incentivization within a company for losing weight, where peer support, you use, you know, Instagram or Facebook or Twitter to report on your weight loss, et cetera, and getting rewards and gamify it. That would be a way of dealing with population health. And of course, all of these jobs come in many flavors. So what I'm saying here, I'm sure you can give me many, many exceptions, but this gives you at least a flavor for the way in which the world is moving in the world of work as of this was this year. So it's not predictions. These were the fastest growing job titles determined by a very large database that was of crowdsourced information produced by PayScale. Site reliability. We all come to expect that our internet access is going to be up 100% of the time, and there won't be interruptions. And of course, this overlaps with computer security and the break-ins that occur, like at Marriott most recently, but have occurred in everything from the Social Security Administration to Target. There's somebody who's more than one in every organization, for-profit and non-profit and government, in charge of site reliability. Project management office manager, okay, I don't have to say any much about that. Data science manager, don't have to say much about that. Global mobility specialist, now that can mean two different things. Mobility very often refers to people where there are people who have physical disabilities to make sure that people can egress and ingress to buildings, etc. But it could, of course, relate to mobile computing as well. I'm going to skip some of these here. Salesforce consultants, the dominant software used in sales. Product designer. There's a very different one. Wound, ostomy, and continent nurse. This is, as people get older, their wounds don't heal as well. They're more likely to have an ostomy, a colostomy bag or something. And continence, as people get older, nurses who specialize in that. God bless them. Not something I couldn't do. Digital marketing. Of course, core, the use of Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter is getting ever more sophisticated because we're all getting bored with seeing these crappy little contests. And, you know, the era of the blinking ad is long gone. But figuring out how to use all that social media to drive donations, to drive profits, et cetera, clearly that ain't going away for a while. We talked about cybersecurity. That's another one. These are all, again, growing at over 100% a year. I'm going to skip some. Motion graphics, right? We're getting more full motion graphics, not just still pictures. People like to see short, quick videos. And some of that is requires knowledge of software to make still pictures look, you know, be full motion without requiring, 35 separate drawings per second, like in a 35-millimeter film. Digital marketing analyst, strategic sourcing specialist. So much sourcing now is global. Knowing how to source, not only to get the best price, but quality. How do you monitor, the quality control of stuff that's made far away? Do you just have to rely on them sending you the product and then looking at it? Are there ways to work with the supplier to ensure quality up front? And data, the final one that has had over 100% growth in 2018 is data visualization specialist. So much of this data, so much of it, it can't be presented in a fat book. We used to go to meetings and see that the results of some big data collection was this fat book of text. Now it's infographics. It's various kinds of images that make very clear what the data is showing. All right, I'll give out the phone number. If you have a work-related problem, either a current one or a longer range, I invite you to call. This is Work with Marty Nemko at KELW. I do want to call workovers, whatever your work problem. Frankly, the harder the better, because I've been doing it over 29 years, and I really have heard a lot and would like to share what I've learned over the years with you. If you've got a work-related problem, this is the time to call. Phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And so now I was talking about the jobs that were absolutely the hottest in 2018. Now we're projecting for 2019. And again, PayScale has made these projections. I'm just going to read these top 10 without much explanation. Cloud computing software developer, data scientist, artificial intelligence software developer, cybersecurity engineer, virtual reality engineer, mobile application software developer, drone pilot, digital marketing analyst, budtender, cannabis, and the number 10, the gig economy workers. But and that's that, of course, worries me a lot. I've said this before on the radio. There's something that scares me about a world of work in which millions and millions of people are going to be spending tons of time looking for jobs, going from project to project, and no sense of institutional continuity. I think the social fabric gets rendered when there isn't some measure of stability in work. So that's that. Now, more briefly, I wanted to do one more about these jobs that are apparently growing. This came from Vault and came out just a couple of days ago. They list what they consider the 7 jobs with the best employment prospects in 2019. Yep, number 1, data scientists. Number 2, web and software developers. Number 3, sales representatives with specialized knowledge, like renewable energy, like enterprise software. Number 4, data protection and privacy officers. Privacy is something I haven't mentioned yet. There seems to be, obviously, in light of the Facebook problems, there's been a lot of concern about that. And, of course, all the cyber attacks that need to be prevented and then addressed after they occur. Number 5, health practitioners. As I was saying, baby boomers starting to reach the age when health becomes an issue. So there, and we're expanding the number of people covered. Governor-elect Newsom said high priority for him is to provide health care for illegal immigrants. The system is really pretty overwhelmed already, and that means that a lot of the hiring, in order to manage it, because a lot of the people going to be covered are not going to be paying much into the system, so we're going to be doing a lot of the hiring and a lot of the care is going to be provided by lower-cost healthcare providers, that is, physician assistants and nurse practitioners rather than MDs. You probably know already, you're starting, instead of seeing an MD, you're seeing physician assistants and nurse practitioners. Instead of seeing a physical therapist, you're going to be seeing a physical therapy assistant or even lower down, a physical therapy aide. Number 6 in Vault's list of best employment prospects for 2019, regulatory agents and compliance attorneys. There's no question this is a long-term megatrend. The amount of regulations has greatly increased. Yes, Trump is trying to eliminate some, but it's mammoth. It's mammoth, and we'll put aside the wisdom of his doing that or not. A compliance attorney, for example, they assist companies and nonprofits and government agencies to manage risks, to develop policies and to ensure compliance, because the penalties are heavy on companies that don't and nonprofits that don't comply. And finally, as I mentioned earlier, workers in the renewable energy sector. As I said, all sources of energy, solar, wind, also petroleum, natural gas, and nuclear. Okay. I think that is all I want to say about that. I'll give out the phone number, then we'll go right to the phones. So, if you've got a work-related problem, whether it's choosing a new career, making the most of one you have, self-employment idea, you want to be me to play Shark Tank with you, or you want to tell your story. I love stories. You got a work-related story, happy one, sad one, phone number here, Work with Marty and Emco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty. I wanted to ask you, I called several months ago and you gave me advice about starting a nonprofit. And basically, you steered me towards doing more volunteer work and see if it was really for me. And yeah, it became a really great passion of mine. And I finally got my 501c3 designation from the federal government. And I'm just really excited. But basically, the project is to, I'm an Uber and Lyft driver now part-time, and I've just been, talking to a lot of other drivers, and we decided to do a nonprofit co-op rideshare service to compete against Uber and Lyft, where, the drivers are going to be able to have the workman's comp, and there's just so many people that have so much talent, but they may not be at the right speed or age for a lot of jobs in the Bay Area, so we're just going to utilize a lot of the talent with them, all of the drivers, to create this incredible platform, and it's going to be all zero emission vehicles, and it's a really great project. But I really wanted to find out how to orchestrate so many people that have these different talents, and how to what you think would be the best way of letting them kind of prosper without too much oversight, so that I don't stifle the creativity and really let them bloom.
Well, I think the first thing you've got to do, and this is going to seem very not sexy, but it's going to keep you from going out of business, you need to talk to an insurance agent. the right insurance agent, because every accident could put you out of business. So you need to figure out a way, you know, is it okay for them to carry their own insurance, or do you need to provide it? And the way you're describing, these are people, you say they're not able to get good jobs, and so they may not have enough insurance. They may have either no insurance or the minimum 15-30. You need to find out about insurance, first thing. Yeah. Second.
Yeah, the state requires all the TNCs to have minimum liability of $1 million. So, okay. I've got all that stuff nailed down.
Great. Then the way you're going to be recruiting passengers and drivers, because the Bay Area is the perfect place for this, of course. What you're going to want to do is start to assemble, you want to market to get drivers in ways that are going to be the people who are going to share your value and hate Uber. And it could be a lot of people in the Bay Area, but particularly if you can contact Bay Area publications and get them to write an article, because you don't have the money at this point. Do you have a lot of funding? I'm assuming you just got the 501c3. Doesn't mean you have funding. How much funding have you gotten?
Well, I've got 150 drivers, and each one of them did crowdfunding. So we've got enough to do a pretty good kickoff with everything that we'll need. And then going into this holiday season, through the second, we're going to try to raise enough money to acquire a good fleet of Chevy Bolts.
Fleet of what? I didn't hear that. Fleet of what?
Chevy Bolts.
Oh, Chevy Bolts. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So those are really expensive. Yeah. Aren't they like $40,000 a piece or something like that?
Yeah, 36. They're about $36,000 a piece. But basically what I'm going to do is try to keep that Chevy plant open in Michigan. So we're kind of branching out not only in the Bay Area, but across the country in the larger cities, and trying to get the drivers to sign up for the platform. And
why would you? That sounds like a lovely long-term goal. But when you have no money right now, you got 150. I mean, that's just four cars. You got 150 drivers. Wouldn't it be the wiser way? See, the thing that makes Uber and Lyft such a ripoff is that they pay you 85 cents a mile, which essentially gives you no profit. You lose more on your car. Wear and tear. It's a ripoff. Right.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you let them use their own cars, but they get a much better rate, so that they're paid more?
With the numbers, Uber and Lyft are taking like 50% of the fares now.
Right.
So we're actually able to allocate a ton more money back to the driver, so that's the incentive. But we wanted to go zero emission, so we're going to provide the car.
The perfect is the enemy of the good. Providing a Bolt is just too risky up front. When you're rolling in dough, you're going to do really well to start out by making sure that these drivers get paid a decent wage, and you want to give them benefits as well. Well, then what you're really having to do here, and yet you still want to be cheaper than a taxi cab, because if otherwise, then it's too small a discernible advantage compared to a taxi cab. So you've got to be priced.
When we do the numbers, it's going to be comparable to Uber and Lyft, and the driver's going to make a base salary of $50,000 or plus the commission on each trip. So it's going to be substantial, much more money in their pocket.
Then it's a marketing job. You should be contacting every major media outlet that is anti-corporate, and that's almost everything. It's from the Chronicle on down. And find out, speak to, I know the guy at the Chronicle's name is Michael Chibantawan or something like that. And to tell him this is a breakthrough idea, no more ripping off of the drivers. Would you write an article about us? And encourage him to do a ride-along or whatever. And every publication, every radio station, every progressive radio station, including KALW, the most listened to show at the station is Your Call. Pitch the big shows that are and it doesn't have to, believe me, your AB, KPIX and all of them tend to have a bias, deep down. They may take the corporate money for advertising, but deep down they don't love corporations. So I think if you pitch this to every media outlet and have them do a ride along, and we have a great TV segment. And with the major purpose is to recruit riders.
And that's the thing. Like I really, there's incredible talent in these drivers, and every driver has a rider in the car. So I think that, the riders that we've been speaking to are just in love with the idea, because it's really the zero emissions, and also that it's a co-op and it's a non-profit.
Got it. I'm going to interrupt. We heard that. I'm going to interrupt you just for purposes of time. What you then want to do is you want to have on people's phones, you want your ask your drivers to ask the passengers at the end of the ride, what did you think of the experience? What do you think of it? And then put those together and put that on social media. Put that on YouTube. Cool. Put that on LinkedIn. Put that on Facebook. Put that on Instagram, which is Instagram and Snapchat are perfect for this. So that's the kind of way you get free. That's guerrilla marketing to get more riders. Because I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, you know, I would not go the Chevy Bolt route at this point. Fine. Long-term zero emissions? Fine. But right now, I don't want you to be so idealistic you're out of business in a year. Does that make sense?
Great.
All right.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. I love the problems that are different, and that was a nice different one. Tell me about your career problem or your business problem. I will do my best to help. It's certainly not going to cost you anything. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, for what I call the workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. My engineer/board operator, Joanne Marr, asked a question. Most of the top jobs I mentioned are in the health science or tech sectors. Are there any top jobs in the humanities or the arts? And I did start out by saying that I focused on a number of them, and I'll just repeat them again just to be, you know, the grant writer kind of jobs, the program evaluator kind of jobs, the even the genetic counselor kind of job is mainly counseling. It's more human, and so not so heavy on the tech. And, of course, there's in so many jobs there are – you have to have a little bit of technology expertise, and almost everything has some technology. But anything that's customer-facing, whether it be sales or what they now call customer success, that is public customer service, or fundraising, or any kind of a manager. If you are, for example, I know so many of the listeners to KALW are nonprofit-oriented, so I'm trying to use a lot of those examples. You know, if you are nonprofits, for right or wrong, they use volunteers. I wish they paid their people. It's a little hypocritical for them to not pay their workers. But if you're the volunteer coordinator, that's mainly people skills. It's not technical skills, right? If there will always be communication departments. In every nonprofit, in every company, in every government agency, there's somebody who's going to be writing the copy for social media. Those are word-centric people. There's going to be people writing speeches. Politicians are not going away. And they've got whole communication spin doctor teams to create the right, quote, messaging and staying on message. Those are not tech-centric. So thank you, Joanne, as usual, for listening so carefully to the show. And those are some ideas for people in the humanities. She also mentioned the arts. And as I said, we are in an ever more visual society. People don't want text. They want visual and they want it fast. So video producers, graphic designers who also have a sense of what will sell more product as well as will bring in more donors, those graphic designers using, yes, they've got to use software, but they also have to have an artistic temperament in order to, and sensibilities and talent in order to get jobs. And I also think there will still, as I worry, that as there'll be ever fewer full-time benefited jobs, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people sitting in those cafes, and they're going to have music, and there'll be a ton of – I don't think they're going to pay well because there's such a powerful desire, maybe especially in the Bay Area, to express yourself with your art, your music, your poetry, your singing, your juggling, your magic, whatever, that I can't have integrity and tell you that I think – that, you know, those kind of performing arts are going to, you know, make you the next Beyonce. I've said this many times on the radio, but I profoundly believe it, is that artistic expression is a crucial part of any life well led. I don't get paid to do this, but this is what I'm a word guy. I think on my feet. This is my creative expression. I also play the piano, as you're going to hear at the end of the show. So please, just because I can't say there's a lot of jobs for people who are not superstar artists doesn't mean you should make the arts not part of your life, whether it's acting in a play or behind the scenes making costumes or singing or painting or whatever it is. I really believe that's a crucial part of life. Anyway, I'll give out the phone number, then we'll go right to the phones. If you've got a work-related problem, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello?
Is that me?
It is.
Okay. Well, you just said painted, which is correct.
I'm not hearing you clearly. Can you speak more directly into your phone or speak clearly?
You just said painting. That's one of the most important things. We're talking about art. What about just when we make stuff? That's what we do.
You're saying what about jobs for people who make things?
We make things. We build, we paint, we do electrical, we do plumbing.
Love it. Okay. Good question.
And stuff like
because the connection's bad, I'm gonna have you hang up. I got it. So because the connection is bad, I'm gonna have you hang up and I'm gonna answer your question with you off the air. So right. There will continue to always be various blue-collar jobs, not just what I was talking about, the heavy equipment repair, but somebody who is, you know, we live in an ever more electrified environment. So somebody who can troubleshoot residential and especially commercial electrical. I like electrical more than, for example, in, you know, heavy construction carpentry, because I've seen so many carpenters and the like, their backs and knees go out by the time they're 40. Whereas electricians generally, and plumbers also, you know, and sewer workers, But I really particularly like electrician because it's something you can last. And I used to like tile setter. I don't like it anymore. I've spoken to too many tile setters whose knees give out and they're breathing all that chemical crap that's in the materials that they use for the grout and for the sealants. So I can't recommend that anymore. But I do think that being an electrician, especially commercial, is going to be ever growing. But also there's a niche that I like within the electrical space, which is as the boomers age, and I do believe that housing is so unaffordable, there's going to be many people who are older moving in with their children, with their adult children who are in their 50s, say, or 60s, parents who are in their 80s. The house needs to be retrofitted. And that can be anything from grip handlebars, you know, bars in the tub, to ramps to come into the house, to installing those sit-down stair things that go up and down the stairs, and taking a former garage or whatever and fitting it electrically, plumbing, in every way for it to be an in-law unit as required by law. There are rules that restrict that, but subject to the rules. So hopefully that gives you some ideas of, I am optimistic that there will be, especially we still are in the everyone to college movement. I think it's beginning to fade. In the last 5 years, actually college enrollment has gone down. I just read an article. It was hard for me to believe. I haven't verified it. So I think that in general, though, there is still this belief that you need a college degree. And I think we tend to view people who work with their hands as second-class citizens. But I can tell you how grateful I am for the handyman to fix my gate or to replace the cabinets that were ruined, the electrician who came in and put lighting up on my deck. I love those guys. So I think there's really room for you. Because, again, if the economy slows, people, instead of moving to a bigger house, whatever, they're going to be remodeling in various ways. And I think that those jobs for good hands-on people are going to be available. Okay, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello, hi. Sorry, am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, okay. Mr. Nemko, thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I was just hoping to get some career advice. So I was just driving and was surprised I got through this quickly. But I've been working as a freelance photographer for nearly all my life. I'm 32. Mm-hmm. And the freelance grind is just kind of wearing on me.
Right.
I do kind of event photography and real estate and just various other things. And I feel like I'm at the point in my life where either I'm going to fully commit to this, even though it's not extremely fulfilling, or I can branch off and do different things like videography, or I'm kind of at the point where I'm just wondering if I should completely do something different.
Well, let me talk about some minor pivots first, and then we'll talk about a major one. You know, the people who are making money in photography there's some under the radar things you wouldn't even realize. Companies need to do photographic documentation of every step of the way in the development of a new product. So being an industrial photographer is something that most people don't think about, but it's pretty cool because you're involved in all these brand new products. So that's one. And certainly everybody knows about wedding videographers, you know, brides Godzilla is still obsessed with having every moment of her special day documented in video. And using good post-production, you can make some pretty amazing videos doing that. I'm going to start there. Do either of those two turn you on or no?
Possibly the first one sounds interesting. That I've never heard of that field.
Yep.
And wedding videography. I do a bit of, wedding photography. And, that's something I don't mind doing in my 30s and 40s, but I feel like the older I get, my 50s, I feel like that's going to just be much harder to do.
Okay, I'm going to just play here for just a moment before, and I'm going to spend a little time going off to something, some radical change. But, obviously, if you're just your standard wedding videographer, photographer, they're so stereotyped, these moments. But I've seen an occasional wedding photographer, and I wish I could remember his name, who he just creates these artistic, gorgeous things that are just like fine art photography in videography that is just breathtaking. And so if you decided you were going to, instead of just be another wedding photographer, be a rock star, you might not burn out on it at all. And in terms of if you're in your 50s or whatever, you don't feel like schlepping all that crap. So you have an assistant with you to do a lot of that, and you're going to be more the designer guy of the plan and do the post-production work. What's your reaction to that?
The word that sticks out to me, what you said right there, is burnout, which I definitely feel like I've suffered through in and out over my career. But I do think... there's something to that. I'm not sure if I really can make, wedding photography necessarily my passion.
What are you passionate? Because I've got a special segment I got to do in a moment. What's something you give a crap about? What's something you really care about that maybe we could find a way to do videography or photography or whatever, something related to that you care about? What do you really care about?
Sure. Well, in terms of like other hobbies, I really like going to the rock climbing gym. I really like music.
I'm going to stop there because I got to interrupt you. Sure. So what if I say what you've got to do is think about whether you're going to become a specialist at being a music event photographer. Contact all the big bands. They all want great videos for their websites. They all want great still pictures. Maybe that's the answer for you. Anyway, I have to say goodbye for today. I have to stop this early. It's unusual. Call back next week. I'm happy to keep talking with you. So, all right?
Okay, yeah, right. Much appreciated. Thank
all right,
you so
have
much.
A good holiday. Okay, why am I stopping? This is only 7:52. Why am I doing this? Well, every year at around Christmas, as is kind of tradition, I do something Christmas-related. So this year what I did is I wrote a short story that integrates three things. It integrates Christmas as it happens, it integrates jobs, and my piano playing. It's called Silent Night. It's 4:43 p.m. Normally, he'd still be badgering delinquent borrowers for another hour or two, but today he couldn't make himself. After all, it was Christmas Eve. Even at femloan.org, which expected long work hours for the cause, microloans to women, this day no one would look askance at him if he left early. So he craned his body out of his chair and was about to leave his office when his boss entered and asked if she could sit down. She rarely would come in and usually communicated by email. So he thought, well, maybe it's to hand deliver the usual year-end, I don't want to say even holiday anymore, year-end gift card to Ben & Jerry's or Seeds of Change or some such. But her face was too serious. Her usual workplace pleasant demeanor was replaced by flatness. I don't know how to say this, but I'm laying you off. He couldn't bring himself to say anything. She waited and then murmured, I'm so sorry. After all these years here, and especially as an older worker, I know this must be hard. You'll get severance plus 2 weeks more pay, whether you leave today or in 2 weeks. Your choice. And she crept out. He trudged toward Bart, vacant, then looked up at the swaddling skyscrapers, buildings he had rarely noticed or had viewed as monolith symbols of financial America. Now those buildings felt like symbols that he had been part of something big, appeasing his liberal values with the belief that femloan.org was one of the few good guys, or I should say good gals. On Bart, he noticed he was the oldest passenger. I'm old. Face it, I'm old. What right do I have to keep working when millions of young people can't find work beyond being a barista? I say I'm a good socialist? Well, maybe it's time for me to walk my redistributionist talk. Trying to savor his last walk from bar to home, he looked a bit longer at the leaves. Californians fly back east for autumn color, yet just a month later, right here, we too have yellows and reds. Look at that liquid amber. That's a great name. That Japanese maple. That ginkgo. It's the world's oldest tree, and it's as yellow as if hybridized. It's been decades creating it. Then, thoughts of his work life intruded. I was maybe 8 when Dad said, "Work. That's what matters. Work." I thought I remember that. Then my first job. I came in right at 9, and I was shocked that people were reading their newspapers. 9:15, 9:30, they still hadn't started. My first job out of college was managing volunteers. I thought being a boss meant I was supposed to boss people. No wonder I got fired. My college education was not about job training, it was about liberal arts. Then there was the time I told my boss I liked New Yorkers because they were straight shooters. Unfortunately, my boss was from the tactful Midwest, and I soon got laid off. Could that statement have contributed? Then I volunteered at FemLoan. It took months, but I finally got hired, quote, "even though you're a guy." Somehow that statement didn't bother me. I had drunk the Kool-Aid. That was, 23 years ago. Little by little, I lost some of the passion, maybe a lot of the passion. Maybe getting dumped is for the best. As usual, he passed the donut shop, but this time he turned around and went in, and he asked for a cinnamon roll. The clerk said, they were made at 4 a.m. They were a little stale. He said, "It's okay, I'll take it anyway." When he got home, he made himself his usual green tea in a Japanese pot. He sprinkled a little water on the cinnamon roll, put it in the microwave, and it came out as moist as if it were fresh. He settled into his easy chair and savored that rare treat, cutting the sweetness with the tea. Now what? Retire? Volunteer for another nonprofit? Maybe it's just that I've spent 2 decades phoning borrowers who tell me they can't pay back their loan. Anybody be burned out after that. Or do I do the standard retiree thing, sleep late, TV, movies, grandkids, doctor's appointments, read? I've got this pile of books on my bed where a woman should be. But I don't really care to have a girlfriend, but I can't make myself read the books either. Should I write my memoir? That feels narcissistic. Get into shape? I'm just not motivated enough. And he took a bigger bite of the cinnamon roll. I'll think about this some other time. He pulled out his laptop. What music should I listen to? It's Christmas Eve. There's this guy, Marty Nemko, who every year on his radio show, which is about jobs, at Christmas, he plays Silent Night on the piano or on the keyboard or something. I wonder if he ever recorded it. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr, as always, and of course to all of you and listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. Plus, what would you do if you were starting over? My wife, Barbara Nemko, and I are going to kick off the discussion by telling you what we would do and then invite you to call and say what you might do. Until then, this is Marty Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.